This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hey, my name is Aaron, 29, and I live in a wee village just south of Glasgow. I've been sober curious for a couple of years now, regularly listening to the podcast while stuck in the drinking hamster wheel. I would class myself as a middle-aged drinker, starting from a young age to drinking 2 pints of Guinness and a bottle of wine every night as standard, ramping it up at the weekends. I had my last drink on the 31st of December, 22, taking off the new year with dry January. 2 weeks in, I took the plunge and decided to join the community. It was the best decision I made. I'm now 100 days sober and looking forward to smashing the big 365. I have made friends for life in the community who are always there if I need support and to help celebrate milestones. Previous failed attempts at sobriety were always on my own. Connection is key. If you're listening to this podcast and you're sober curious or attempting this on your own, I encourage you to make that leap and join us. You won't regret it.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It is fantastic to have you listening. We're dead excited about today's guest. You know, I get giddy when we go worldwide. Well, today we're going live to California very, very shortly, which is just fabulous. Really good guest for you to hear from today. Right, quick introduction, or indeed a reintroduction, as to who we are. My name is Sharon Hartley. Everybody calls me Shaz. Based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. 5.5 years. Alcohol free. Woo, flipping who. Just celebrated a big old milestone of like 2,000 days. It's all quite accidental. Turned 50 in November. Stopped drinking at the age of 44. Although that wasn't my plan to stop drinking at the age of 44. It was to simply take a break, reset, and then get fully back on it. But it all changed. Kel Surprise, there was not one area of my life that did not improve when I removed the booze. And here we are, Over the Influence, singing about it week in, week out. And I don't do it on my own. Hello, Ben Anderson. How are you?
Hello, very well. Thank you. Full name, Sharon Hartley. Good to be here. I'm Ben. I'm 35. I live in Liverpool. I am dad to Leo. I'm stepdad to Alfie and Millie. I gave up booze 3.5 years ago, and I didn't mean to be alcohol free forever either. I actually didn't realise how bad my drinking had got. It was only after I removed alcohol that I looked back and realised that actually my drinking wasn't good. As Danny said a few weeks ago, Sharon on the podcast, it's progressive. It gets worse. That's how it works. And I think for me, until I removed, I just drank like everyone else did. You know, I was a normal drinker, in inverted commas.
Normally. Normally.
We're all doing the same thing. I think the difference for me is in my 20s, I drank because I was having fun and having a good time with it. In my 30s, I started to drink because I was stressed. Until I started producing this podcast, I didn't realise that. And actually, this podcast came into my life at the right time because Sharon wanging on about sobriety made me think, right, I'm going to give this a go for 3 months. 3 became 6, 6 became 12, 12 months became 3.5 years. I'll be 4 years alcohol free in July. Best decision I ever made.
Absolutely brilliant stuff. While we were chatting there, Ben, our guest is on Zoom, nodding. A lot of nodding going on. A lot of agreement. Yeah. He gets it. Chuffed to bits to welcome Luke Colson onto the podcast, based in Venice in California, originally from London. Now, I want to very quickly explain why, Luke, that you're here. So basically, I'm far too old to be doing this, but I find myself in TikTok rabbit holes, okay? And I'm scrolling, and the algorithm went, have a look at this bloke, all right? And I thought, press play on that. Who's this guy? And you kept appearing and appearing and appearing. And I love what you shared. I loved your stories. I loved your humour. And I thought, bloody hell, what a fit for Over the Influence. So, Luke, welcome to OTI and thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me. It's so funny that you found me on TikTok. And that's a new thing for me. I have a podcast as well. Not that I'm here to plug that, but it's all about surviving trauma. And we can get into that. My childhood was a bit of a pickle, if I'm honest with you. I mean, you know, we talk about why we start drinking, and retrospectively, I can figure it all out now. But at the time, I had no idea. But my podcast has guests on, similarly, we talk about all the things that fucked us up and how we got through them. And I just started a TikTok. I don't even know why I did it, but I think a lot and I journal a lot and I talk a lot. And I thought, I need more outlet. So I started the TikTok. Initially, I was just on my Peloton bike and I was talking whilst I was on my Peloton bike. I thought, well, what am I doing? You know? So I just started chatting about what it's like being an English person in the US and all the challenges we have. And that started to get some traction. And, you know, 3 viewers became 500, followers became 1,000. I'm on 30,000 followers now, and I don't know how that happened. I mean, it literally just happened in the last 2 months. And I've got all these like regulars that are like sending me comments and chatting, and it's just hilarious and tagging me. And I'm making money now from TikTok, which is absolutely insane. It's not what I do in my day job. But now I'm thinking, well, now I can just become a grown up influencer and leave my day job. But that's like a.
I love that.
And then at one stage, I just started sharing my sobriety. And I had stopped to think about that for a second because that wasn't my audience at the time. My audience was people finding me funny and telling stories. But I suddenly realized that such an entirely massive part of my life in the US has involved getting sober. And why the hell shouldn't I include that in some of my funny little rants and funny little stories? And just, I almost think that that's what the growth was. It was like people saw me and related to me in a whole different way. So in between a week of utter nonsense talking about the argument I had at Starbucks or somebody saying a word I'd never heard of or didn't understand, or even talking about gun crime or, you know, everything and anything with humor, I've started sharing maybe once a week some really tragic things that I went through. I put a small comedy twist on them, but the fact that I'm able to share these moments of utter shame and despair and remember that time of my life, which wasn't that long ago, 5 years ago, and then the 20 years leading up to that, the fact that I'm able to openly talk about that, I'm getting goosebumps now, is incredible. It's like the most cathartic, therapeutic thing that's ever happened to me. I'm not ashamed anymore. I don't have guilt anymore. I understand why I became a real down and dirty alcoholic, like the worst possible kind, hiding, lying, cheating, like I was possessed by the end. And I never thought my life would get back on track. And now my life's better than it's ever been. And I don't take that for granted. I realize, as much as I'd never want to go through that again, and I'd never want to do the things I did to people again, I realize all that shit needed to happen to me because I wasn't really living until that moment where it all kind of came crashing down about 5 and 6 years ago when my father died. And that was the beginning of the new version of Luke. And it's, you know, yeah, so that was a long answer. There you go. I don't know what the question was. But there you go.
No, I've forgotten the question myself. I don't care. It's really, really interesting listening to you. And we'll come back to the stuff you share on the socials and on TikTok as well, because, yeah, there's some hellish stories on there that are told with such humour as well. And I think humour is the key to a lot of this. I really do, alongside the stuff that people go through.
I agree.
Can we rewind, Luke?
Yeah.
Five years sober, breakdown 6 years ago. Yeah. And in your own words here, you lost everything due to drink.
Yeah, I really did. And I might get emotional, so
it happens a lot. People get emotional.
And please
here.
Only share.
It's fine.
Yeah, whatever you're happy to share.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sure. I mean, listen, I was running away all my life. I went through some stuff as a kid. And I don't mind talking about that either, but we can rewind after this. But, you know, there was drugs through my teens, drink through my 20s, drink and drugs through my 30s. And then I gave up cocaine in my early 30s. I realized I had a bit of a problem. And I thought when I'd given up the drugs that I'd cracked it. Do you know what I mean? And I think that happens to a lot of people. And I was so proud of myself. I was like, oh, I've done it. I got married around about that time. And I realized that I was drinking more, and I think the drink was just there to substitute the lack of drugs. And it just the way you were saying it was progressive, you know, it's like one glass of wine at the pub on the way home without anyone knowing turned into two, turned into three, turned into going for a drink off, you know, mid-afternoon at work and coming back and then having another drink after work. And this was over years. This was like over a decade, right up to my 40s, just around about when I came over to the US. I realized I was just, what was the point in buying wine at the pub and hiding in pubs when I could just go get the bottles of booze? It's cheaper and easier. So I had all these weird hiding places around London, and I'd just be drinking bottles of wine, just out the bottle. One glass of wine on the way home had turned into two bottles of wine on the way home, just like that. And then when I got home, my wife would be like, should we get some wine for dinner? I'd say, that sounds like a fucking great idea. So we'd have more, and she'd go to bed and I'd have more. I was probably drinking three or four bottles of wine a day and trying to function and trying to be a dad to two brand new children. And she realized something was going on, because you can't hide that amount of drink, no matter how sober you think you might be when you're drunk. People see it. You think you're okay, but it's like the frog in the boiling water, you know? So that was that was heavy on her. And we agreed I'd you know, get myself to AA. And the 2 years leading up to coming to the US were almost worse, because I was lying. I was going to AA and telling everyone I was sober, and I was going to the pub on the way back from AA three times a week, you know? So that, and I'm just not ashamed to say that, because I know there's people that do the same thing. And I know that there's people that are desperately trying to get sober and they can't figure it out. And I thought that was the worst for me. I thought that was about as bad as it was going to get.
Actually, Luke, we know that they're listening to this. You know, we've got a lot of people who listen to this podcast who are already alcohol free and have made that choice. We get a lot of people who say they've been listening for years, still drinking. So that person that you're talking about is listening right now.
Yeah. Well, and I appreciate that. And that's why I speak openly about it, because a friend of mine, I'm obviously not going to name any names, but he just told me he was 4 years sober. He just told me he was drinking for the last 2 years. You know that? Well, I'm not judging him, because it doesn't surprise me. It's everyone's individual journey, right? But the problem with me is it was my family's journey too. And that's where the problem started, because when you start to lie to that degree, everything becomes a lie. Everything's a cover up. For me, I just needed to have drink, or else I felt desperate. There had to be wine. I was hiding wine around the house. I was hiding wine in the car. It was crazy. So AA was sort of a bit of a joke. I got sober maybe for about 2 weeks and then told everyone it was a year. I think I even took a chip. And that, again, it's like, I got to live with that, and that's fine. What am I going to do about it? I was sick as a fucking dog. You know, I was consumed by the booze. It took over my life, but I was functioning and I was doing great at my job, and I worked in advertising. I still do. And it's drinking. I was drinking. So I'd find the places where people were drinking. I'd find the people in the pub at lunch. Then I'd find the people in the pub in mid-afternoon. I'd find the people in the pub after work. They'd all think that was just their one session for the day, but I was doing every session for the day. So we decided, I got a job offer in LA, and it was that classic thing of let's move countries. That's going to help.
That will solve everything, won't it, Luke?
And the cliche of what is it, wherever I am, wherever I go, there I am, right?
Yeah.
Still me, still my brain, some sunshine and a new job.
Booze is legal there too. They still sell it in shops. They still sell it in restaurants.
Right. And my brain's still my brain. And now I've got a new way of consuming alcohol and a whole bunch of places where no one's going to find me, because I didn't know anyone. So if anything, it escalated the situation. And not to go on and on and on, but drinking two or three bottles of wine a night, not forgetting what I was drinking in the day. And then I got called that my dad was sick. He was on his deathbed out of nowhere. He was 80 years old. Flew back to London, drank on the plane, drank when I got home, drank. My mum was like, you seem really drunk. And I was like, I'm fine, you know, trying to cover it up. Went to see my dad, literally saw him for a day, and he died that night. And I just couldn't hold it together. I had a rough time with my dad. You know, he wasn't very nice to me. And that was a lot of, I've made peace with it and I've forgiven him. And I talked to my mum about it the whole time, and she's okay with the fact I share about him. But he was an asshole to me. He took his anger and his problems out on me, not my older brother, on me. I didn't do anything right. I couldn't do anything right. Everything I did was wrong. If I did the washing up, it wasn't correct. If I put this over here, it wasn't in the right place. If I did this at school, it wasn't good enough. Try that for all of your years when you're growing up, all the time where your parents are meant to be supporting you and uplifting you and giving you the confidence to be alive and navigate the world and feel safe. And I didn't feel safe. I didn't know any of this until I started to unpack all this once I got sober. I was a worrier all my life. I was a worrier. So when he died, it was sort of everything kind of just kind of washed over me about like what that meant and my relationship with him. And so that year was, I think I was trying to drink myself to death, if I'm honest with you. Came back to LA. And I lost 2 weeks of my life. I don't really know what happened or how to account for those 2 weeks. But I ended up in a motel with all of my worldly goods packed into 4 plastic bin bags that my wife had thrown all my stuff out of the house, changed the locks. And I maxed out my credit card in a motel room in Venice. And I drank for 5 straight days. I just can't really, when I say that, I can't really, it doesn't feel like that was me. But I think I was on the end of, like, I was on the edge of that being the end. And just by chance, my phone rang. And it was my oldest friend who I'm in touch with, but not in touch with. He lives in Venice. I've known him since we were 3 years old. And I think he's probably the only person I would have picked up the phone to, because I was annoyed with everyone else because I'd isolated everyone else. I had a complete and utter mental breakdown. Like I don't know what happened. I don't know where I've been. I don't know where my car was. Didn't even know if my car was outside. Didn't know where I'm assuming my wife had my children. I didn't know if I still had a job. Picked up the phone and I said, help, help me. I think I'm about to die. And he came and found me, and I just cried for, I don't know, I cried for about a day on his shoulder, like uncontrollably. And he got some numbers from my phone and he called some friends who were in the program, and they came and literally scooped me off the floor. They counted something like 38 bottles of booze around the bed, you know, that I've been lying in the motel. It's crazy to recount this. I haven't really done this before. So, and that wasn't the beginning of me sobering up amazingly. Wouldn't you think that that would do the trick? But I went into AA and started getting a day and then 2 days and then slipping back into the off license and buying booze on the way home. And by the way, when I say home, I was in it's like a short-term rental, and I spent 5 nights sleeping in my car because I didn't have any money. And my wife wouldn't speak to me, and I don't blame her. She'd taken the kids away. And at 4 or 5 months back after that breakdown, which I categorically classify as a breakdown, I suddenly started to put some days together and realized that I didn't really want to leave my kids behind. And I probably had some reasons to try and fight. And that came from a sudden wave of love for myself, which I hadn't really had in 20 years, 30 years. I felt like I deserved to be miserable. Didn't really feel like I deserved to be successful, to be a dad, to be happy. I'd sort of been mentally arranged to just deal with the fact I was useless. You know, that's how my brain worked. So somewhere inside of me, a little spark went, and I thought, maybe this is the time I'm at the bottom, and I can't imagine there's further down the bottom of the pit. I thought I'd had bottoms before, but I thought I've got nothing to lose now, actually. Don't have my kids, don't have my wife, don't have a house, I've got nothing to lose. Why don't we try again, you know? So I went to AA every single day, and these guys wouldn't let me out of their sight. I think that was pretty impressive. They wouldn't let me out of their sight because I think they thought that if I did slip again, that would probably be the end of that. They took me to hospital, put me on a drip, did a detox. And that's kind of that. That was the very beginning of piecing, not my sobriety together, piecing me together. Because without understanding why I was doing that to myself and what I was running away from, there wasn't really going to be any way that I could start to fight for myself. And when I understood that I'd been conditioned or I'd been traumatized, then I started to have some sympathy for myself and some compassion for myself. And then I got quite excited about feeling those feelings and understanding that I wasn't to blame. And I kind of ran with that. And once I started feeling that I was entitled and allowed to have a good go at life, it kind of energized me. There you go. There's an answer.
And what an answer. Lee, there's so much to go at there. I think, first of all, thank you for being so honest. It's amazing.
Well, I told you.
Really? Well, yeah.
You know, it happened, and I can't... It happened, you know?
I mean, I know we've known each other for all of half an hour, Luke, which isn't really a long time in the grand scheme of things. But what you're presenting here, 5 years alcohol-free, 5 years sober, is a kind, sensible, passionate man who loves his life.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that was so different for you in the rock bottom that you've described. And that's because of a substance. That's because of something that you drank. That
correct.
You use the words, help, I think I'm about to die.
Yeah. And talk about self-medicating. My depression and anxiety caused by PTSD from everything that I had experienced. There's another big one. God, it's funny. So when I was growing up and I realized something was going on and I was always scared and fearful about life. I've now attributed most of that to my, and again, I'm thinking my mum when I say this, but to my relationship with my father. But quite an important thing, when I was 12 years old, my best friend died in front of me. That's not going to help anything, right? So we were on our BMXs. He came off, he hit his head on a car, and he never woke up. He died. I was there. I had to go and get his parents. The parents came, the ambulance came. And to make matters worse, we were chased out of the park by a group of kids. And, you know, possibly that was one of the reasons why he came off his bike. So there was a court case that followed. The parents wanted these kids to pay for what they'd done. And I had to go to court and stand up in a witness box at the age of 11 years old. It was like all over the news. And it was ruled as an accident. But like, just to see that when you're that age and already feel fragile, not feel that you're particularly well conditioned for existence, that stayed with me forever. I mean, for the next 5 years, I was an absolute mess. And I didn't start taking drugs till I was about 15, 16. So I probably had 4 years of just retrospective wonder about what I maybe could have done to save his life. And that lived with me for a very, very long time. I've done work with that. I've done grief counseling and all sorts. And I feel like good about that now. I feel he's wherever he is and he understands that. I mean, I don't really believe in, that's a whole other conversation, isn't it? I don't know what I believe in at this stage, but I'm at peace with that. And I'm at peace with my dad. But the more I look back on, I can't remember anything from before the age of 10 years old. Nothing. And I do work in therapy about that. So fuck only knows what happened in those 10 years. I look back on the 35 years of drinking and I'm like, I was running from my life from all of these feelings, which I didn't want to feel. And wine was my wine, good old wine. Not vodka, not whiskey, wine. Give me some white wine.
That comes in drink glamorous bottles.
Lovely.
That are designed beautifully. Yeah, yeah. No.
Yeah.
It's sophisticated wine. White wine.
Yeah, exactly.
This is a 1997 Bordeaux. Bollocks.
Yeah. Well, when you find the £3.99 bottles that are on the bottom there, and then you can, with the screw top, you know, that's where you save money, you get a bang for your buck. But self-medicating. And it's like when you, and you guys will know this, right? Because the journey of sobriety is not just, it's not just forcing yourself to stop drinking. It's understanding why you drank in the first place. I had so many blackouts where I could have died, right? And I'm not saying that to like show off. I'd wake up in the morning, I don't know how I got home. Bruises, cuts, scars. You know, my poor wife at the time, not knowing where I'd been, I couldn't account for where I'd been. I'd get calls from pubs, bars saying, you left your credit card and can you come and pay for the damage? Or we were worried about you. Did you get home safely? Or put my head straight through a TV at one place. I just fell. So, and I would black out. I would literally, my brain would shut off. And sometimes apparently it was awesome. We'd go to an after party and I was the life and soul and I'd had a great time. I'd be like, I don't remember being there. In the same way, I don't remember the 2 weeks that led to the breakdown because I was in a 2 week blackout.
Could listen to your story for hours. I think it's fascinating. And actually, you're one of only a handful of people, Luke, that have used the word alcoholic. And we had a guest on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, one of our community members, who absolutely embraces the word. And to sort of quote, not exactly verbatim, if it walks like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, the chances are it's a fucking duck. And I love that. And it sounds to me, I'm not putting words in your mouth here, that you two own that word. Yeah. And has that helped your recovery, helped to get to where you are now?
I guess I just don't really care. Like, I think the more I evolve as a sober human, the more I use that word because it is what it is. Like, I'm not going to say I had a problem with booze. I'm not going to say I was drinking too much. I'm going to say that I was a desperate alcoholic that was addicted to everything that alcohol gave me and then took away from me. And there was times where there was times where I was drinking two bottles of wine before I'd arrive at work at 9 o'clock in the morning. And I'd go to the local supermarket, I'd buy two bottles of wine. They'd all be looking at me funny because I was the guy that kept buying two bottles of wine in the morning. Once you have to start changing the shops where you're buying the booze because you're feeling guilty or judged that the person who's selling you the booze thinks you've got a drinking problem, well, then you know you've really got a drinking problem, you know? So I'd go to a place and I'd buy two bottles of wine and then I'd get the code for the toilet at the back of the supermarket. And then I drink two bottles of warm white wine in the disgusting toilet in the back of the supermarket. and then go to work. I don't know why. I couldn't tell you why I was doing that. I was evil. I called him evil Luke, but my therapist suggests I call him alternative Luke or desperate Luke or hurt Luke or traumatized Luke. I couldn't tell you why I was doing that and why
because it's progressive. That, like as Donnie said, it's progressive. That's how it works. It gets worse. That's what happens.
Yeah. And also to the point where at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, I'd drunk so much the day before that I was, having withdrawals. And the only way I could sensibly get my shit together was to give my body what it needed in order to level out. And it is crazy when I think that this is me that I'm talking about, because it's like, that was never going to be my story. My dad was an alcoholic. My granddad was an alcoholic. I was the guy that was going to, well, now I am the guy that's broken the chain, right? But I was the guy growing up that had it all together. But guess what? I was just the guy that was really good at covering it up. So until I wasn't.
It's weird, isn't it? Because nobody chooses to become an alcoholic. Nobody sets out to be addicted to alcohol. And yet on the flip side of that, when there is a problem, and in your case, you have described the absolute pits of a rock bottom. Mm. Bizarrely, nobody sort of chooses sobriety, actually, until they're further into it. In our intros, we've already mentioned it, Luke. I didn't want to be sober. Ben didn't want to be sober. A whole stack of our community members are like, does this have to be forever? No. But in order to start to experience the light and the hope and the benefits and the changes and the flip side of the absolute storm that you've just described with us, you've got to start and you've got to go through it. But the other side, haven't you?
Yeah, you do. And I think, I love being sober. And I'm like, I love telling people I'm sober. I love telling people I used to be an alcoholic. I don't care anymore. At my work, we have all these functions and parties and we all go out and I'm there. I'm having a great time. I don't suffer from a whole situation where I don't put drink near me or I can't go to a bar. I am done. I was in hell, and I'd lost absolutely everything that I knew. And now when I have hope, and confidence, I'm not going to take a drink again because I don't want to go back there. And it took me to the depths of hell and nearly beyond that for me to realize that. But my work, they laugh about it. And they're like, don't put that beer too near Luke or whatever. It's like, don't give me a sip of that or else you won't see me for 3 weeks and I'll come to work with, someone else's clothes on or something. And it's funny. And if you can't laugh, it was so tragic. I find that with a bit of humor, it opens up people's, conversation around it as well. And also you find that when you get sober, quite a few people in my instance, would suddenly reach out to me and said, I think I've got a problem, or how did you do it? Or can I get sober without going to? And I'm like, you can get sober any which way you want to, but you got to start with trying to figure out, do you know what I mean? I don't have all the answers, but you can't just turn off the tap and your brain's going to be like, oh, that's all good now, So I try and help people if I can as well. But yeah, for me, it was like, I finally, 4 years, I finally got a year, an actual year. Not a pretend year, not a lying year, not a fake year, a year. I did it. And I'm not drinking after I've got a year because I want 2 years. And I know it's just a day at a time, right? That's what they like to say. But now I'm like, I've got 5 years. In June, I'll have 5 years. That's fucking nuts. And I'm so proud.
That's amazing.
I'm so proud of myself. I'm so thrilled. Because it was like the unachievable thing. It was the thing that was going to, it's like the thing I'd been trying and failing and trying and failing and trying and failing. And my dad would be like, told you so, told you so, told you so, told you so. So it's like, not that I've done that for him, by the way, but I've done it. to say fuck you to everyone that ever doubted me. And I don't go around telling people because I don't want validation. I keep it pretty quiet. There's a lot of people that I tell I'm sober, that I'm very close to, and they go, oh, I didn't know. But now with the TikTok and the podcast, I love talking to sober people, and I love talking about sobriety, and I love talking about my journey, and I love talking about mental health and the fact that we've probably all been fucked up at some point, and that none of us know how to talk about it or deal with it. And half of us are addicted to all the fuck knows what, because we don't know where to turn or who to talk to. Let's, like what you guys are doing, let's open up the frickin' doors.
Yeah.
And just let everyone know it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if you're an addict or an alcoholic or you're traumatized or you wanted to kill yourself or you stole a car or you went to, it doesn't matter. Like, if you want to sort your life out, there's ways to do it, but it's not going to happen overnight. But you, for me, I'll keep going back to this. I started with a spark of hope that I wasn't useless. I could do it. I had the strength to do it. I don't know where I found that strength, but I found a spark and I worked with it.
I want to dig, Luke. By the way, Chaz, side note, I can totally see why you wanted Luke on the podcast. Absolutely banger fast streak. Too right.
I don't mind to say I told you so, Ben. Don't mind to say I told you so, but I bloody well told you so. I knew it'd be perfect.
Luke, this is probably the impossible question, but you know, we've now known each other for 40 minutes. And I feel like if anyone's going to give the impossible questions a go, yeah, it's going to be you. That spark.
Ben's loving this, Luke. He's loving it.
Because I think for me, we've been doing this now for 4 years this month, this podcast.
Yeah.
And we've had hundreds of hours of conversations with people. Mm-hmm. And it's taken us a while to kind of work out, you know, what is our philosophy on all of this. And I think the thing that I am most passionate about is early intervention. I think it's nuts that, for example, the NHS here in the UK, early intervention isn't really part of the process here. Mm. And it just completely blows my mind. I think what we find here is that, you know, we know that there are people listening to this now who are, you know, sober curious. They're still drinking at the moment, but they've got it in their head that they want to remove alcohol, all at different stages. It always comes back to this Desmond Tutu quote for me, which is, we've got to stop pulling people out the river and we've got to go upstream and find out why they're falling in. My impossible question for you, Luke, is that spark, that little thing, you talked about how it was a spark, it was a sudden wave of love for yourself, sympathy and compassion for yourself. How can we move that spark forward? How could we take that spark and put it there 10 years earlier? That's why it's the impossible question. And if you can't answer it, just say, bloody hell, move on. Chaz, you ask them instead.
It's not that I can't answer it, but like that just hit me, that question, because it's like, you know, I think about the pain that I was in and I think about the pain I caused people. And I think about some situations. Like, thankfully, my kids were just about too young, but my now 14-year-old, you know, I speak to him about it now, but there were times where he would tell me, your eyes are weird or you're speaking funny. And that breaks my fucking heart, you know. And growing up in England, I mean, you guys know as well as I do, like you probably spend more time in the pub than you do at your house, right? It's just our culture. And I was really good at drinking. But when I think back on it, drinking always made me nervous because I kind of knew that it would take me somewhere that I wasn't entirely sure I could be in control of. And when I think that it took me on that journey for 2 decades, let's say between the age of 20 and 40, and it escalated, and the people I took with me and the damage I did, it didn't occur to me in my 20s that maybe I had a problem. Didn't occur to my parents that anything was wrong with me. They didn't even know I drank, let alone took cocaine or nothing. So, and I think at that point, I'm just trying to think of the point where someone had said to me, I think probably when I was 30, right, when I gave up drugs and I thought that I could bridge the gap with drink. For me, that would have been the crossroads where someone, if someone was there that said, well, there's a reason why you're doing that. There's a reason why you're running away. And there's a reason now why you've given up the drugs, but you're drinking more. I probably would have been open to listen, because I'd started having blackouts around about then, big ones. And it just hadn't occurred to me that it was going to escalate the way that it did. So I don't think I have an answer as to how we'd move the spark back. More, I just fucking wish. Like, I can't live in regret, but that's 15 years between the age of 30 and 45. I'm just like, you know, I'm 50 this year in June. That I could have... Now I'm into my wellness, not to sound cheesy, look, feeling good, looking good, eating healthy, living my life, not like spending all my time doing those things, but enjoying what's around me. And I spent 30 to 45 in a blackout, more or less, hiding, lying, cheating, going to work, deodorant, breath freshener. Even still, people are like, oh, big night last night, Luke, you know, you can't hide that shit. So, I don't know. How's there more awareness and how's there more openness for Luke 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when I was 30? At that fucking crossroads, right? That's up the stream with 15 years of essentially plummeting towards some really fucking ghastly shit that I could have completely sidetracked. What does awareness look like for a 30-year-old? Or what does awareness or more open-minded conversation look like to a 25-year-old? Because here in LA, let me tell you, you know, and again, we're not meant to talk too much about if you're in meetings or if you go to this, you go to that. I mean, I'm a big fan. There's a great sober community out here. I mean, there is a lot of kids out here. There's a lot more drugs, a lot more heroin than there is in England. There's a lot more crack cocaine than there is in England. So there's a lot more recovering drug addicts, but they mix them all in. And there are a lot of kids that have been sober for 5, 6, 7 years, got sober when they're 18, 19, 20. It's much, much more common here for the parents to say, this, you're going to rehab, or wait a second, let's get you to a meeting. And then when they go to those meetings or when they find that community, they don't feel like they're an outcast. They feel like they found the cool club. They found a bunch of very cool looking, attractive, like-minded humans that have got substance issues. I don't know if that's, I don't know how things have progressed in England, if I'm honest with you, but it was still very taboo for me.
Yeah. Angela in our chat box saying maybe it sounds like there's less shame there than there is here.
Way, way less. Way, way less. I mean, honestly, I'm not even joking. Here in LA, especially in Venice, probably 50% of the people are sober here and they're more than happy. And you bump into people. And I bump into people I work with. And I'll go to a work meeting. I work in advertising and TV out here. I'll go to a meeting and there's a fucking guy I was just on a conference call with talking about a project. You just give each other a high five and a hug. Yeah. And you'll say, oh, you're in the gang, you know? Directors, producers, you know, it's fucking great. And there's a bunch of, they're not going to name them, there's a bunch of celebrities. And you're like, that's fucking what's his chops? And you can't say anything. You're made to feel like it's actually, you're actually made to feel like the people that are drinking are the losers. Whereas I think there's a stigma, yeah. Or there certainly was when I was growing up, like, you're not going to get AA, and B, what are you doing getting sober at the age of 25 or 30? That's what needs to change.
And I think it's changing.
It is?
I think it's changing. Hellfire slowly in the UK, slowly. I mean, you talked about the cool club and the good-looking people. You just described Over the Influence.
Yeah.
Here we are. Here we are. Here we are.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, I see it. I think California is also about healthy living. Correct. I mean, you know, you've got to choose your battles. Like, you go to Chicago. I don't know. I was going to say Chicago or Seattle. I mean, I still think you'd find some good groups of sober community there. You know, I think when I was going to AA in London, I found some wonderful people, you know, as much as I was a lying, cheating, thieving little head, I did find some great people there. I just didn't allow them to fully accept me into the community because I was...
But isn't that key? Isn't that key about finding your people?
Yeah.
that's it. I found you on TikTok, yeah. And you were like, I thought, I love him. I felt like I knew you because you've got that, well, you've just got that sober thing going on, and you're like, yeah, there's another one. Absolutely brilliant. And it is about connection, isn't it? And it is about community. But your story, Luke, freaking hell, it's just one of hope. And as Ben referred to, that spark, there is hope for anybody.
Yeah.
I think that's it. You know, I think that's my message. Not that I've come here to give a message, but when I was in like a fetal position on the cold floor of a motel, which by the way was quite expensive still in Venice, I'm not gonna lie, and with the surrounded by clanking bottles and the room service knocking on the door and me locking the door because I didn't want to come in, didn't know where I was, what time of day it was, and then shaking, looking at the ceiling, thinking, all I can think about is how the effects of the alcohol are wearing off and I need to find another full bottle of booze. When I think back at that, it's like, I think that's why my ex-wife, she has compassion and understanding that I was taken by, let's call it a disease or the wrath of addiction and alcoholism. And that's why we've been able to rebuild our relationship as co-parents to our children. And she understands that. And that's why, if you're going through it, you have to understand that it's not your choice, right? But if I can get off that fucking floor, having consumed that much alcohol, and pick up a phone and yell, help me, and shout out an address, and be here where I am today, like... I used to wake up every morning for 20 years and have a panic attack because I'd have to figure out where I'd been, what I'd done, what sort of hangover I had, if there was any bruises on my body, did I smell of booze when I go to work, am I late, am I sweating, do I have the shakes? 20 years. Now I wake up and I'm like, oh, it's 5 a.m. Oh, that'll do. The fucking day, I'm getting a coffee. Let's go. Let's go. It's the day. because I'm free.
We're with you. We're with you, Luke. We're coming.
You know, like take every single thing that I did that consumed me, hiding, lying, stop the shakes, thing. Am I sweating? Could check my teeth. Do I put the clothes on there? The old clothes. Where my thing? Where's the car? God, sometimes I'd go out to take the kids to school. The car wouldn't be there. I didn't know where the car was. Take all of that out, and how much brain space do you think that opens up for you? If 99% of your life was drinking, hiding drink, covering up drink, lying about drink, drinking, finding a place to drink, buying drink. 99% of your life. Well, I've got 99% of my brain is free now to figure out what to do with the rest of my life. That's quite exciting.
It's hugely exciting.
It's really exciting.
Lee, you know, I didn't mean to upset you with the question earlier about the spark. I think the best answer that I've found from all these hours of conversation that we've had is that actually you do it by it's other people. It's you doing what you've done today.
Yeah.
You know, someone is, as I said, there's people listening to this who are drinking thinking, God, I don't want to do this anymore. And they're hearing your story, and you know, if someone's got that little voice in their head going, bloody hell, this is me, he's talking about me, then this is your sign.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. The fact that Luke, that you're sharing your story today, don't overthink it anymore. That little voice is there for a reason. This is the sign. Yeah. This is the moment to go nip this in the bud.
And you can't do it on your own. Like, you just can't. So I don't know what you guys have in place, but you know, when we do our podcast, especially if it's one about addiction or sobriety or recovery, we make sure people have our email or we put them in touch with someone, or you know, you must, everyone has a sober friend, or everyone, I suppose everyone needs to know how or who to reach out to, right? Because if I'm like you just said, if I'm drinking and I'm watching this and I'm like, I have been drinking on autopilot every day and I can't stop and I want to stop, but I don't know how, I don't know who to talk to. I guess that's another answer to your question. How can we bring the spark further downstream? Who do people talk to? Like who does a random person who is having a f-ing nightmare whilst watching this, who doesn't know who to call or who to reach out to, what do they do? I don't think it's that simple for some people. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. I didn't know who I was supposed to speak to, so I just continued. So it's about allowing people to, I don't know, to understand, do you call the hotline, do you call the AA hotline? That feels like it's an archaic thing to do. It works out here. Lots of people do it. And then you find a meeting and then they're gobbled up with a bunch of amazing people that take them under their wing and they might be their friends for the rest of their lives. But there's a lot of people that don't know or don't want to do that. And that's understandable too. So I think like just figuring out what do you do? And I think that's a rhetorical question, you know?
Luke, we're out of time. Sadly, unfortunately, it's flown by. As Ben said earlier, thank you so much for sharing so honestly and from the heart with us. It is a remarkable and inspiring story. And I'm really glad that the TikTok algorithm jumped into my 50-year-old brain and went, watch this geezer. You're going to really, really like him. It's been epic. Before you go, Luke, just give your podcast a plug as well. And if people want to follow you, where can they find you?
So my Instagram is just Luke Colson, Colson. My podcast is called Well, That F***ed Me Up. Which is
love that.
Genius. When you're searching for it, though, you need to put a little asterisk star where the U would go. Otherwise, it won't come up. But it's good. It's popular. We've been going for 3 years. We've had about 100 guests, all sorts of amazing journeys through trauma. And my TikTok is luke.is.alive_. And you'll find me being an idiot for most of the time. Anything that happens to me during the day, I'll post a little story about it. And I just had a video that got 1.4 million views. So that was fun. I don't know how. I was just trying to say the word murderer in an American accent. And apparently everyone thought it was fucking hilarious.
I'm going to seek you out.
Murderer. Yeah. You guys.
Murderer.
Can try it, but that's...
Murderer.
That
was watch the TikTok. Watch the TikTok. Luke Colson, thank you for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's been wonderful to be here. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. Every second of it.